my sexy, ooh, mental health, intellectual confidant. Welcome to another episode of Confidently Insecure, the podcast where we are absolutely sure we don't know everything. I am your host, Kelsey Dara, and I'm excited for this week's guest. He is a certified sex therapist. That's right. A licensed individual and relationship psychotherapist who specializes in relationships and sex. He is stacked. Listen to these degrees. A bachelor's degree in cultural psychology from New York University. Honey, we know that ain't cheap. And a master's degree in mental health counseling from the University of Miami, a fellow sort of Floridian. And I know him as the viral therapeutic therapist on Instagram. I'm so excited to introduce Todd Barrett. Thanks so much for joining.
Hi, Kelsey. Thank you for having me. I don't know if I can really meet all of that, but
please,
I'm excited to be here.
It's very early. Yeah. I'm so jazzed to have you on. I mentioned offline, you are a friend of our friend of the pod, Zach Nui Towers.
Mm-hmm.
And before we get into all of the juicy therapy goodness, I want to ask, how do you come up with your viral Instagram posts on your diagnosense? Am I saying that right?
Diagnosense.
Diagnosense.
Just so like nonsense.
Like, what is
like,
the
life
story?
Life is nonsense.
What behind that?
It's nonsense. I mean, it's basically all about me because I'm so self-involved. So it's all of the things I experienced. No. It's about me. It's about my clients. It's about, I don't know, something I see on TV. It's not a mystery. I think it's just a lot of the things that we're all going through. So everything I post is something that I've been through, I've talked about in therapy, I talk about with a client, I hate in the world, all of that.
There's a lot to choose from.
There's a lot to choose from when it comes to hatefulness, yeah. But I have to try to keep it under control.
And I love, like, dare I say, the aesthetic. Like, you bring a very gorge aesthetic to a therapeutic conversation, which I feel like is important to make it not sound so sciencey and scary.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, I am not a graphic designer, but I the shit that we go through to see it in black and white is so boring. So I don't know.
Yes.
I like color, even though everything I wear is not colorful and I don't like color in my decor. But if I'm looking at something, I want to see vibrant colors and fun fonts, even though I'm getting sick of my graphics. But anyway, yeah, thank you.
Oh, well, we love them. I want to know what made you want to work in sexual wellness therapy in general. How does one get there?
Well, it's been my whole sexual career, professionally and personally. I mean, I've been in therapy forever, and my therapist, who I still see today, he's a sex therapist, and it's always been a part of my therapy, so I just thought that that's what everybody talks about. Everybody just talks about sex, in or out of therapy. And then, and this is starting when I was, like, 13. And then I quickly realized that, you know, in the 90s, people are not talking about sex. I wasn't 13 in the 90s. When was I 13? I'm 35.
we're gonna
I'm not
just
doing math
it.
Right now.
We're not doing the math.
It was at some point in this culture where we were not really talking about sex. Being queer was, you know, not so trendy and chic. Not like it really is now. But so I talked about that in therapy, and it was just really helpful for me because I was having sexual issues. I would get anxious. I would get performance anxiety. I couldn't get hard. Couldn't get off. I was doing tons of drugs, which also wasn't helping. So then as I got older and started working in school or studying in school, still no topic and discussion about sex. Went to grad school for therapy. Still no. There was one class on sexuality, and it covered sexuality, sex, and like multicultural. It was like all one class. And I was like,
no.
So it was just became very apparent to me that when I started working, like sex would be something that I would be talking about all the time with my clients. That's what I did. And then there was a certification process, which I did, which I don't not regret, just because there was a lot of hoop jumping and I knew a lot of the information already. And so that's what I do. And so the clients that I see individuals and couples now, and some of them are coming in for purely sexual issues, but most people are coming in about sexual relational issues, because that's really what sex is about. It's not just a genital inserting into a space. It's about, you know, the reality that in the context that happens when we're getting naked. So that's relational, emotional, and psychological. So when I'm seeing a client, you know, it's really about much more than sex. Everyone's always like, what's the, like, the dirtiest thing you've ever, I'm like, we talk about anxiety. Like, that's like, it's like really not that. Like, what's the craziest thing you've ever heard? I'm like, I don't know. What? Someone got scared. They weren't going to come. I mean, it's really like that's human so relational stuff. Yeah. Well, so long story short, that's my journey. Yeah.
It's a huge misconception, I think, for people. I mean, okay, I have a million questions based on what you said. I identify queer, bisexual. I'm in an open relationship, very non-traditional, and saw a sex therapist for a long time and am laughing. It gets kind of dark and sad, but she was actually murdered. Her name was Dr. Amy. She was in Los Angeles and she was murdered.
Was not expecting you to go
I know. I am so sorry.
She was murdered
by her ex-boyfriend that she had a restraining order against.
So familiar?
It was all like over the news. She's kind of like a celeb sex therapist too. She dated Drew Carey at one point, but she was kind of like iconic. This. Yeah. In the BDSM scene. So like when people are like, well, why'd you stop? I'm like,
she was killed. Oh my God.
She was murdered. But I learned so much in that time and I'm laughing because it really was ever very rarely about the physical act of sex. It was so much almost more cutting and deeper into the emotional stuff than some regular, say, CBT therapy I had done in the past. But I wanted to rewind just a little bit, like right, and talk about the lack of education that comes with sex therapy in getting degrees. Like, you are stacked, honey. Those schools you went to are very well respected. Like, I know you put a lot of effort and time into school, but what are we expected to do as people who maybe are wanting to get into the sexual wellness? Like, where do we learn? Where are we supposed to get any of the education from?
Well, I mean, specific trainings are really limited in general because they're geared towards training for a specific thing. So, like mental health or marriage isn't really going to incorporate sex into it. Just like it's going to be a lot of that training is geared towards diagnosis and all of that shit. So, you know, we kind of have to do our own work, which, you know, ideally we would just go to elementary school and like the learning about relationships, sex and life and taxes and stuff would start then. But, you know, we just like left to figure it all out on our own, but we must learn algebra for sure. solve for X. But yeah, books, for therapists, there is a ton of different trainings. Now I think it's much different. I have friends that are in grad programs that have like entire programs on queer sex. And I'm like, when the fuck was this when I needed it? So I just did that all on my own. But now there are books coming out left and right that are really wonderful books. You know, we were just talking about Jen's book. Jen Winston. Great book. There are tons of books about sexuality, expansive, diverse, really great educational books. But that's the sucky thing is that it's kind of, you know, all of the ways in which we deal with sexual anxieties, they're created in every context. So even a lack of education and having to do the work ourselves, like that's a communication that we shouldn't do these things, right? So we have to really even work through that, if that makes sense. You know, the idea that we have to find out on our own and seek out information on our own is really hard, especially when it comes to our body. So, books, courses online. Like I have a sex course online. Many sex therapists do. Same with relationships. So it's a lot of self-directed learning, which is kind of shitty. I really wish there was like infrastructure somewhere in our lives that was required learning on how to be a human being, not just for sex, but and just in a like a general kind of, okay, and what do you need to do to function? Like, this is how you survive in the world. It's kind of weird that, you know, as a culture, we really emphasize so much on work and all of this other stuff, which is necessary, but we have no outlet for relational, sexual, social learning. It's just bizarre to me.
Right. No, I mean, you bring up such a good point. We've talked about it here on the podcast a lot about how, you know, we're not even close to getting the sexual wellness education in the years that it should be taught and that it should matter. Yeah. Like, we're still teaching abstinence and there are still schools that are fighting to take away sex education as a complete whole. And if we're not going to get it in school, I mean, we're not even getting taxes in school, but that's a whole nother conversation. They don't want you to know how to do your taxes. Now I sound like
I can't even talk about taxes now. I'm going to be very triggered. I may not be able to.
I know. I'm like, let's go back to dicks. I like that.
Let's not talk about taxes, dicks, clits, and the rest. I can't.
But I do. Do you think there is a proper age to be learning about this stuff? Because I watch a lot of TikToks. And I love
good luck to your child. Mental health.
I know. I watch a lot of like parenting TikTok. Where I don't know why I don't have kids and I don't want them. But
I have to say, what brings you to the parenting one?
I know. The algorithm got me.
There's a part of you that wants to be a parent.
No, I have cats. That's fine. And one that's could argue parent. That I parent myself and my partner every day. But I see a lot of moms taking it on themselves to introduce like the lingo very like maturely to kids, like toddlers. And I'm like, do we have an age where it feel like coming from a sex educator and therapist, do you feel like there is a correct age to be doing this?
I mean, it really depends on your kid and what they're asking about. But I mean, in terms of like research, so most kids will see porn by the time they're 9.
Oh,
right. So,
wow.
You know, I mean, kids are walking around. I think kids know how to use their phones better than I do. I mean, like they have phones with access to porn. They're talking, or their older brother has a friend's older brother, and they go to the friend's house, and the older brother, and they have their older brother's porn, and blah, blah, blah. So, like, porn is out there, sex is out there, it's on TV, it's everywhere. So, I think the sooner the better. You know, I think the challenge is that people really overthink it, and they're like, oh my God, the children, like, oh my God, you know, we're going to ruin their life. And it's like, hello, they're going to grow up and fuck. So, like, you know, and they're holding a phone that has access to, like, naked bodies. Mm-hmm. They literally came out of a vagina. So like they're going to be curious about that. So, you know, I'm not saying as soon as they can walk and talk, you should sit them down and show them a whole PowerPoint about, you know, the body, pleasure, and masturbation. I mean, not no, but I mean, if we lived in a world that wasn't so sexually freaked out, it wouldn't even be a thing. Like, we would just talk to kids about sex and it wouldn't be, oh my God, you know, this is really scary. What do we do? Close your eyes, blah, blah, blah. You know, so even the question of, you know, when do we do the, you know, that's just based on the sexual fear that you grew up learning about and probably how you were shielded from looking at, I don't know, a breast or a butt or whatever on TV when it came up, or how you couldn't watch R-rated movies or whatever. I'm just making assumptions about your childhood development.
No, you're nailing it.
But yeah, I mean, I think as early as possible, start having conversations. It's like, when would you start talking to kids about food? I don't know. Right away, they start eating. They have to eat to live.
Right. That's such a good point.
And pleasurable and a loaded topic now, too. But yeah, I don't think it's too soon. What are the TikTok videos saying?
I mean, the ones that come across my For You page, they are very like pro just saying the anatomy, like there's no nicknames for things, and like adults, you know, do certain things that kids can't do, but learn as they get older. And there's a lot of emphasis on like relationship. And I think, I don't know, this might be a controversial subject, but do you believe you should be learning to have sex with people that you care about and people that care about you? Or can we be like talking about casual sex
for children?
Yeah, like I don't know, as a teenager, right? Like I drilled into the idea that like you are supposed to be in love and it's supposed to be magical and special, and it was the back of a fucking pickup truck in a parking lot, and it hurt and it sucked. It was awful.
No, just the back of a pickup truck in a parking lot.
Yeah, now my 31-year-old self, I'm like, was that
magical? I meant to say, do we know anyone that owns a pickup truck?
No, I grew up in Florida.
I may need to borrow it. Yeah. Where in Florida?
Tampa.
Scary. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I know why Miami. I was recovered. Yeah.
Exactly.
Not my life. Miami's any better. Florida's Florida.
Exactly.
No, I love Florida. Love, hate it. Same. But I mean, I wouldn't be like saying, okay, like, Sal, I don't know who Sally is, but
let's make
Sally,
it Sally.
You're 8 years old. Like, you know, it's really hot if you have casual sex with like Dom Top 5 in the bathroom at a gas station, you know, but I mean, casual sex is sex, you know, yeah. I mean, but yeah, no, kids are really encouraged, whether it's based on religion or based on values or based on just, I don't know, whatever, horrible things, that sex is between two people that love each other and when they're ready and they're married and they're, no, I don't think that's something that should be taught.
No, I agree.
It's like, you should only eat food with people you love and want to spend the rest of your life with. I don't know. I just keep going back to food as an analogy.
No, it works very
because
well.
Because it's so destigmatized. We don't even think twice about like, who would I eat dinner with? No. Obviously, sex is much more vulnerable than eating dinner.
Yeah.
For sure. And when I say sex, I don't mean penetration of whatever. I just mean pleasurable interaction with somebody you think you want to fuck. Food. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's just because sex is so loaded that we're like, I don't know. Is this okay? The answer is yes, it's all okay. But there will be people, and there are, which drives me fucking crazy. They're like, what about rape and what about murder and what about all of these terrible things? And I'm like, obviously that's not good. You know, I'm not endorsing just this kind of free for all, but you know, when it comes to sexuality, most expressions of sex that are consensual are wonderful.
Why do we not care about safety with sex when we're teens? And I might be speaking too much from personal experience, but like I said, drilled, use a condom, get pregnant, like take birth control. I was put on birth control when I was 14. Never used a fucking condom. The guys never used a fucking condom. Like, it was, I got chlamydia from the second person I ever slept with. Like, was never
at least you
coming.
Got that over with right away.
Yeah. I was like, it's not that bad, guys. It's 10 days of pills. You're fine. But there were like, is it the tabooness, or are we afraid of the idea that we're being safe during sex and that means we're lame? Or do we like, why aren't we safe about it when we're young? Even into our 20s, let's be real. I'm guilty.
I was like, what? Is this just a young thing? I didn't realize that.
No, okay, fair. I started early. I'll get that out there.
Well, I mean, even I think the idea of safe sex, like as opposed to risky sex. Like, I remember when I was growing up and I was doing research in undergrad and I was researching about gay sex. It was all about risky sex. There was no pleasurable sex. There was no sexual challenges gay men experience. It was all like risky sex, HIV, and meth addiction. But as an indirect way of kind of getting your question, it's all about sexual fear. And then that's, again, not me encouraging, you know, go have sex with 500 people at the corner and, you know, whatever. I'm not saying that. Like, if you want to do that, I fully support you. And I think I would be very impressed.
That's a lot.
But no, it's sexual fear is why people are encouraged, you know, safe sex. I mean, it's also healthy. You know, we want to protect ourselves. But to some extent, if we're going to be having sex, it's like, if you're going to go outside, you may catch a cold. If you're going to be having sex with multiple partners, you know, the chances are increased that you'll get an STI. But your question was, why do we like risky sex?
That's also part of my question is, why do we like risky sex?
Why do we like it? I don't know. It depends upon what type of sex you're talking about. If you're talking about sex without barriers, so without condoms or whatever, or sex with strangers, or I don't know, those things that are traditionally thought about as risky. It really depends on the person. So some people don't like using condoms because they don't like the feel of it. They say it's more intimate without. They want to be bred. They want to be, you know, they want to get pregnant, or metaphorically or literally.
Right.
It can be erotic for people. I just generally don't like the words risky sex. I know that it's like this word, people use it, but I don't like it because who defines what that is? Everyone's going to say something different depending on their geography, religion, and background. Yeah. So some people might say casual sex is risky, whereas other people might say it's normal. A straight person might say, oh my God, I would never hook up with two different people in a week. I don't know. But you know, for me, that's just a typical week. I'm not kidding.
Tuesday.
But where am I going with this? I don't know.
I was just following you.
I don't know where I'm going. I'm lost.
No, it was risky sex. I think you you put it nicely too, is that like risky can mean a bunch of things to different people and to blanket statements.
Yeah, it's kind of like ethical porn. Everyone has very different ethics.
Right. Like 100%. I wondered, you know, when you were talking about I have to imagine there's like a cave person instinct to breed, right? Like that is what some people will argue the purpose of sex is, right? Like, especially if you grow up in church, right? It's like you are doing this to procreate.
Did you grow up in a church that told you to procreate and breed? Did they use the words breed?
I don't think they ever said breed, but it was like I did a purity ring ceremony. I mean, that may be where my kink started, was just like,
I was about to say, I think now I know the answer to your question. Purity ring?
Yes, it was.
Was it a cute ring?
It was pretty cute. Yeah, I got it from Jamaica. It was clear with little diamonds in it. That makes me sound so privileged. I take back everything I said. It broke like the next year, and then I started fucking like crazy when I was 15. So, but it wasn't pleasurable sex. I'll say that. It took me a long time to have pleasurable sex. But I want to talk about gay sex. Fuck the heteros. Yeah. We talk about them all the time.
Yeah, enough.
I want to talk about like where do we. I'm going to ask this like I'm an old white Republican church going lady. Like,
oh, I love that character.
Like put on my full Karen mask. Like,
please.
How did gay sex start if the purpose of sex is to procreate? Like, when did we take this turn into pleasuredom and like self-fulfillment? Like, how did that happen? End scene. That character is very hard.
That was great. I mean, you should really think about bringing that character to life full time.
Taking that on stage.
Yeah. I don't even know. I'm just, whenever I hear values like that, I get so shocked by just the wildness of it. I don't know. I also don't really ever talk to people who have values like that. So I'm like, I don't even know.
Maybe clients' parents or something, right?
Yeah, although that's why I don't work with children. But that's just bias. I mean, people have been having gay sex forever.
Literally.
It's just bias that people grow up with thinking that this is natural. I hate that word, natural. Yeah. Ugh. It's just bias, mostly religious bias that people read the Bible. I've never read the Bible. But so I hear people say the Bible doesn't talk about gay sex. So if the Bible doesn't talk about gay sex, then, you know, it must be a mystery or some kind of disease, right? But no, I mean, I don't really actually know the history of when gay sex was first identified. Is that even a
thing? I feel like it had to start with like protozoas, like little
amoebas. Yeah, like I've seen memes
before humans existed.
Yeah. Or I love the memes where it's like, they're not gay, they're just friends, and they're like humping each other.
Oh, classic.
But this is how culture really shapes sex and sexuality and the way we understand it. And, you know, how politics shape the way we think, politics and shape science and et cetera, et cetera. You know, that being gay was a disease for a while. You know, these are the things that really impact how we understand our bodies and how we use them and how the opinions we oppress other people with. Based on what we think is true. And it's just bullshit. It's all wrong.
Yeah.
It's just cultural.
Right. I remember like as far as I can remember being bi, and there wasn't like this really like awakening. It just always felt like a part of me as far back as I can remember. And I've said on the podcast, like I did everything with a woman before I ever did with a man, but I didn't really like, I'm making air quotes, count it, because I was so told that like sex is this one thing, penetration, penis and vagina. And then now, you know, 30 years later, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's all these other iterations that people are so lucky to be learning that sex doesn't necessarily have to involve any of those things. I wanted to ask if someone is exploring and having sex with someone of the same sexuality of the first time or the same genitalia or same identity as them for the first time, how can we get over that fear of like, I feel like I don't know what I'm doing because I've been told or seen in media or porn that sex goes like one way.
Like two pumps, penis and vagina, and then an orgasm. Well, I mean, the fear, I mean, I still have sexual fear. I think that the challenge is that you know, it's kind of like, how do I feel less anxious in relationships? It's like, well, you know, you're going to feel anxious.
Yeah.
You're just going to have to deal with it. And I don't mean to be dismissive, like just deal with
it. That's the truth.
To some extent, if we're queer, living in a heteronormative world, and even, you know, straight, cis straight people have sexual fear. I mean, everyone has sexual fear. Mm. We live in a world that is fear-based when it comes to sex. You know, it's going to be there. Mm. So one, it's normal, you know, it's just going to happen. But two, because queers don't necessarily aren't watching TV and seeing queer sex without feeling ashamed of themselves if someone else is in the room who's straight, it's going to trigger all of that stuff, all of that shame, all of that fear and everything. The way that you deal with it is you really kind of just need to have a lot of sex. Yes. I mean, you need to practice. You know, it's like dancing. If you suck at dancing, which I do, I'm like Elaine on Seinfeld. I just kind of like twitch. But you need to practice, you know, you need to practice and you need to learn, and you need to think about what you want to do. But this is where a little effort goes a long way and why I like doing sex therapy is that, you know, oftentimes when it comes to like depression or anxiety, sometimes it's just kind of like, you know, the shit we kind of have to learn how to manage and cope with forever. Not to sound too hopeless, but, when it comes to sex, you know, we can learn specific things. We can work through our shame. We can work through the experience of living in a heteronormative world, internalized queer, trans, gay, homophobia, et cetera. We can learn about our bodies, feel better connected to our genitals in ways that feel powerful, learn to love our genitals. I don't even like the word genital. We need to invent a different word that it describes all parts of pleasure.
Yeah.
It's a terrible word. Yeah, so a lot of learning, a lot of unlearning, and then a lot of practice. And if you kind of do that stuff, the fear will go away. I think the other challenge, though, is if you're single, it can be hard to seek out sex in a way that makes you feel comfortable, especially if it's with different people. I'm not discouraging that. What I am just saying is that, you know, when it comes to feeling uninhibited and being able to explore what's erotic and fun and pleasurable and comfortable and making noises and being stupid and messing up and et cetera, you know, sometimes that can be hard to do when you're doing that with, like, you know, multiple different people. Sometimes it can be helpful to do that in a context of a safe relationship where you're not freaked out about, oh my God, do they even like me? Are they going to reject me, et cetera? But that's not to say that you can't practice with casual sex either. But that's sometimes a lot of the clients I see, they're like, well, I mean, I need to do this, but I don't really want to, I don't know, ask this random person to fist me. I kind of want someone who I feel comfortable with.
The guy on the app down the street who I might run into.
I don't
want
to go to
shop.
The back of the pickup truck and like park.
No. Triggering.
Yeah, I do though.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's a fantasy. This might be horrible advice, but I was a big fan, I mean, since COVID, I have to say was a big fan of sex parties and group activities. And I felt like that was such an easy way to go be a fly on the wall and see how certain things are done. And especially in the kink world, I could literally go with a mask and a wig on and like take notes. And I wasn't a freak. I was actually a voyeur and I was like sexy and like a fly on the wall.
Were you actually taking notes or?
I brought out my typewriter. No, they take your phones at the door. So, but like mentally I was like, okay, next time I come, no pun intended. Next time I go to one of these events,
I'm glad to hear you came.
Yeah, it's a great time. It's like, I'm going to try, you know, the St. Andrew's Cross, or like, I'm going to do it with these girls who seem to be like giggling in the corner who also don't know what they're doing. Or, you know, I'd run into a couple in the closet who's like, this is my first time. And it felt like, I don't know if that's a good piece of advice, bad piece of advice, but I think sex parties are such a great, learning ground, but also like it's the expert dome too, right? Like you could see amateurs and pro in one setting.
Pro sexual. Yeah, I mean it's a normalizing experience, you know, where it's kind of like exposure therapy.
That's
you can face your fears, they're normalized because there's so many people who are pursuing, enjoying, and having experiences that you know you maybe thought about. So that's great.
I want to talk about, so you mentioned you have
I've actually
sex
never
courses.
Been to a sex party. What?
You haven't?
No.
Sorry, I didn't mean to say that was such a surprise, but why not?
I'm basically a virgin. virginity doesn't exist as a social construct.
Thank you.
I don't know. I don't even like parties. I get socially overwhelmed. It's not, That's not a thing, I guess, for me.
Surprisingly, do you live in LA or New York?
Both.
Oh, okay. In LA, at least, I can't speak to New York because the buildings are so much smaller. But in LA, it's so spread out. And surprisingly, you can go the whole night without talking to anybody. Like, I've been sometimes where I'm like,
maybe I should go.
Is anyone going to approach me? Is anyone going to, you know, want to diddle my doodles? No? Okay. I'm just going to walk around. And...
That sounds so cute.
It did.
That's going to be the title of my book.
Oh, yeah. There you go. I'll take only 2%.
Thank you.
Okay, wait. Okay. So I want to go. You talked about how you have online sex courses that come with community chats and group processing, which you call your secret sauce. So first, can you tell me about what exactly the courses are, and then how group processing for sex therapy can be helpful? Because I don't think I've ever done that. Unless you count the sex parties, but that wasn't really anyone. Yeah.
I mean, that's a group process, just a different expression.
In a form. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a process group, but you're having sex during it.
Yeah.
The courses, they're like programs. It's actually really cool, the group sessions. So every month it's like group therapy, and people come and they talk about whatever they're going through. I have two programs. One's for sex called Sex Sessions, and one is for relationships called Love Lessons. Mm. But so both groups come and we meet and people just talk. So it's kind of like, I don't know, like a call-in show, but it's a group therapy or a webinar where there's participation. Mm. So someone will share their experience. You know, I really want to explore this kink with my partner and I don't know how to do it, or my partner wants to do this and I don't want to do it, or a couple will come on and say, we're trying to explore sex, and this shame stuff comes up and shuts us down, and I'll ask them more questions about, okay, well, what's coming up? Like, what has been your history? You know, what was it like at the beginning? What is masturbation like? Whatever. It's cool. And people are really open and they share. Some people don't put on their video. Some people do put on their video. Some people just ask questions in a chat box. But it's super cool. And like everything people bring up is something that I've gone through. I know that most of my clients have gone through. And I think that's a really helpful component of the sessions, because as you were describing with the sex parties, it's really normalizing. You know, when you're hearing someone describe something that you're going through exactly, and you're like, oh my God, me too. Especially when it comes to sex, especially when we all have this fucked up history with learning about, you know, all these horrible myths about sex. It's so helpful to hear people share their stories. So a group experience directly when it comes to having sex or talking about it, can be really powerful.
I had never thought about that, but like, the truth is, some of the most eye-opening conversations I've had has been in like a group of my friends, or like, you know, my all women text chain is very different from like my all queer text chain whenever we're talking about sex, and like those experiences are so different. And I think it's so important to get that like diversity of conversation. And it just made me think of a question, like, who do you think is better at sex, gay people or straight people? Or who has less anxiety around sex?
Recording. I just feel bad for straight people. No, that's so terrible to say.
Our audience is very gay.
Okay, great. No, I mean, I think every single person has sexual issues. Cis straight men have sexual issues. as much as queer people do. However, depending on your identity, you're going to have more issues. So, you know, the layering of identities, you know, when it becomes this intersectional experience, can be really challenging, because, you know, you grow up in a society that tells you you're worthless, or that you're less than, or that your pleasure isn't important, or you know, it's going to be extra challenging. But everybody has and needs to work through sexual issues to some extent. But I find that straight people, unfortunately, I think straight couples are talking much less about sex at the beginning, because
there you go.
For straight people, they grow up being programmed to think about relationships, marriage, children, a traditional trajectory towards relationships. And there's also, for cis straight people, there's also a gender dynamic where there's this real perceived lack of safety and real desire not to encroach on people's sense of comfort and safety. There's a lot that gets unspoken for a lot of straight couples, compared to a lot of queer couples, you know, that's in a non-traditional trajectory, mm-hmm. Or grew up with that thought, you know, start talking about sex from the beginning. Mm-hmm. But not all the time. There's no kind of universal thing, but that's what I find most, sure. at least in my practice, is that a lot of the gay couples, specifically the gay men that I see, talk about sex right away.
Right. It seems like, I do wonder why that is, where it feels so much. I don't want to like stereotype a group. So that like the gay men are not,
I know that's the challenge, but some stereotypes are true. The gay men talk about sex, I think, a lot more cis gay men.
And it seems less intimidating to talk about as well. Like it doesn't have the weight that maybe a woman approaching a man to talk about a sexual fear might be. And again, I live in Los Angeles in West Hollywood. I'm also talking about it from a very like niche point of view, but I just wish there was, do you think it's because it's a man talking to a man about sex that it seems so much easier?
Well, I think everybody's different. I mean, and the other thing, though, is that it's not to say that this is inherently based on gender or sexuality. This is based on the culture of gender and sexuality. So there's a big difference. You know, it's not saying that men, cis men, or any type of man more than any type of woman, it's cultural. So there's no like inherent, like men are more sexually driven than women. That's all crap. It's cultural. But I think it's just because there's a much different culture with gay men around casual sex, that many gay men meet for casual sex. I love how I'm talking about this. Like many gay men meet. casual sex is much more common in certain communities. So because of that, there's more conversation about it.
Yeah. You said something, I want to skip ahead to a philosophy I read on your website that said, you're not fucked up, your culture is. And you kind of just spoke a little bit about that. But how can we dive into that a little bit more? What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't know. I found that after doing therapy for a while, I found that people think that they're like specifically fucked up. They have this experience and it's them and they did this terrible thing and they're this terrible person or whatever. And that's not even being cartoonish about it. People are convinced when they experience normal challenges that they're fucked up. But so I realized very quickly that I'm not really big into biology, but I think we all grow up thinking that, you know, who we are is our genetics and like, you know, we have these biological disorders and whatever, when the reality is they're all just a kind of cultural constructs of certain ways of understanding ourselves. And I think they're highly problematic. So there's that part of how we understand ourselves. But then there's also parts of the world in terms of all of these toxic aspects of our cultures in terms of racism and homophobia and transphobia and sexism and misogyny and et cetera, et cetera, that really change how we see ourselves and create some of those feelings of I'm not good enough. I lack value. No one's going to love me. I'm anxious to be in this group of people because what if they find out that or blah, 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 blah. So those thoughts, I think, are specifically created by the world we live in. It's cold, it's uninviting, it's unloving. It doesn't provide us with the education we need to love ourselves or to help ourselves love other people or to fuck or anything. So, you know, that's what I mean. So long.
Yeah. I'm reading Michael Pollan's, I think it's called How to Change Your Mind. And it's all about this guy learning about psychedelic therapy. So he does LSD, mushrooms, and MEO5 DMT, the toad. But in traditional psychedelic therapy, they allow 3 days for the experience. And on the first day, they have the client or patient take MDMA to break down the barrier between client and patient to allow what they say is like 5 years of therapy in one day, so that the next day when they do their LSD, it's a lot less scary, blah, blah, blah. And I was thinking last night about how I felt like that could be used in sex therapy, where someone might be so terrified to come to a sex therapist and say like, here are my most shameful, deepest fears or inadequacies. And I just really need some, I need us to do Molly together before I can like say that to someone. Not me personally. I have no shame and no fear about this conversation, but how do you?
You're like, I'm on Molly right now.
I know. I'm like, it's Thursday at 9:30. Yeah. How do you help break down those barriers for someone starting sex therapy where you're like, do you know? Are you like, you're not, you're not going all the way there. You're not digging deep enough. Or are people just like, so here's a photo of my penis. This is the problem. Here's my partner. You know, like how, in your experience, what are you seeing?
No dick pics in session.
No dick pics.
But I do accept dick pics from people that aren't my clients.
There you go.
I love a good sext.
We love that.
No, I mean, everybody feels so uncomfortable. But I'm very gentle. I mean, it's what I do. So I have a way of talking to people. I have questions. I really try to use humor a lot because, you know, we're talking about sex, not cancer. I try to make it fun. I notice, you know, when I start asking questions, many people turn bright red. And I'll notice, I'm like, so it seems like you're a little red. we talk about the discomfort. But I don't think I've had a session where we talk about sex where someone hasn't felt uncomfortable. Because the reality is most people aren't asked directly, like, where did you learn how to masturbate? Like, they don't even think about it. So they're being asked questions they've never thought about. Sometimes non-sexual, like, you know, I don't know, what was pleasure like with your, like, did you have fun with your mother as a child? You know, sometimes that makes people feel very uncomfortable. So, you know, in therapy, we're asked and being asked questions that are new. Some things when it comes to sex are particularly scary for people. But then there are sure some people that are just like, my dick curves to the left and it's hard to fuck my partner who's a total bottom and I just don't want to do it and I don't know what to do. But I think everyone feels uncomfortable talking about sex.
That you bring up such a good point that you say you've never had, you know, a session or maybe a client relationship where it doesn't become awkward at some point, because like you said, the conversation often goes beyond physical sex. Most often goes on beyond physical sex, I imagine. And you got to get to those like subconscious things.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's also so many people are so afraid of being judged. You know,
big time.
I'm going to think they're crazy or fucked up or weird or reject them in one way or another. And it's just a reflection of how I think we're also judged. By the world and our partners and our family. And we just kind of acclimate to a sense of, okay, I'm going to be judged. So I'm not going to share everything.
Right.
Which is a bummer, but it's the reality.
I feel that way about talking about having sex with a trans person, because I am my bisexual, pansexual, whatever you want to call it. And I grew up in a society where no one was out as being trans. No one was talking about it. It wasn't until I moved to New York and then Los Angeles. And now I find myself feeling that fear again of like a kid about to have sex for the first time and feel like they don't have any idea what they're doing, just because purely it's another stage of experiencing a new part of sex, though I claim to be such a sexpert, you know, or very non-traditional, not shameful about talking about it. But I find that that's something I'm worried about for fear of being judged, for sure, not only by the therapist, but that am I going to recognize some sort of internalized transphobia? And so I'd rather just not talk about it, keep it down, keep just waiting until the next something to pop up to talk about it, right? Like it's not only the fear of someone else judging me, but me judging myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's the way you see other people seeing you is about you. I mean, it's the fear of being judged because you're judging yourself. But also what I find is that when people start talking about it after a couple of sessions, it's like, you know, talking about the weather. So, you know, it's just important to push through that discomfort, and therapy is a really great place to do that, as opposed to maybe if you're with a friend that you don't particularly trust, or you just want your own space to do that.
Right.
Because you're literally paying for the space.
That's a good point.
You're like there you should
be getting
something
out of
it. Use the fucking space.
Yeah, amen. I saw you repost something yesterday or 2 days ago, and I thought it was so fucking funny, where it was like, if you like the show Euphoria, you're going to love therapy.
Yeah. So good. I wish I could create these memes. They're
you
so,
do.
So great. I didn't make that.
No, I know. But like, you do create very viral, repostable content.
Sure. But not those funny memes. Like, I wish I could be funny like that. But I'm just.
You're very
but
funny.
But so good. Also, though, I love Euphoria, but I can barely tolerate it. It's so disturbing to me. Like, I
really?
they're all so hot and it's like a great story, but like, I don't know.
I grew up in Florida, like I mentioned, Florida, and this was exactly my high school experience. Like,
same, which is why I'm like, I'm triggered. I don't want to watch this. Like, I lived through this. Like,
it's bringing up a lot for me, right? Like, it
is therapy then.
Yes, it is therapeutic.
Maybe you should watch it with your therapist.
Oh, God. She seems very busy. I don't know. I have another lady therapist. I don't see a sex therapist right now, but I would like to get back into it as the world opens back up. I think that is a goal of mine this year, while we're getting safer with seeing people and strangers, just to let you know.
Sure. Why wait?
Yeah. I mean, it feels safer. It feels safer to use the excuse of COVID than being like, I'd rather challenge myself in my relationship again. Not necessarily challenge, but like grow through something with a relationship. It's not really, I mean, we've done everything.
You can do it whenever you want.
Yeah.
But do it virtually. You don't have to see a therapist in person.
Oh, 100%. I'm never going into a therapist's office again. I will only.
I don't have my office anymore.
No. It's like a waste of money. And you don't have to deal with parking in Los Angeles and New York. No, thanks. I would only do online therapy for the rest of my life. This episode is not sponsored by BetterHelp, but y'all know that that's my favorite recommendation is online therapy, where I can do it in my bed with
it's
Oreos.
So much easier.
And like,
so much more comfortable. Oreos.
Yeah. I had my therapist though tell me though that one time she did get a session where the guy wouldn't turn on his camera and she's like, turn on your camera. Like, why are you being weird? And he was in the bathtub.
That's
and she
cute.
Was like, okay, never mind, turn your camera. She's like, wow, you really can do therapy from fucking anywhere.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, good for him. That sounds really comforting.
And yeah,
that's like self-care therapy,
a warm hug,
calming, a warm hug all at once. Wow.
Yeah. I can't believe we've already been talking for so long, but I want to wrap up and ask, like, what do you see, maybe not only for yourself, but the community as a whole, as the future of sex therapy? What do you hope for? What are you seeing happen?
Well, I mean, I think the community for sex therapy, for sex therapists, compared to just for sexuality and sexual expression. I mean, I think it's just, we're in a great place when it comes to sex. We're talking about it more, thankfully. You know, there are like memes about sex now, whereas before memes, you know, we couldn't find this stuff anywhere, even if you were intentionally looking for it. So I think the more we're bombarded with some of this stuff, the better. And I think we're just going to hopefully normalize a variety of genders and sexual expressions, which is what I am most excited about, you know, in terms of gender and sexuality.
Yeah.
But I think these sexual scripts, these heteronormative sexual scripts are going to persist for a long time. Like the idea of sex is penetration. I don't think that's ever going to go away.
Yeah.
Which is so heteronormative and so much based on just getting pregnant. That's just ridiculous. But still people are like, well, you didn't have sex. And I'm like,
well,
you didn't fuck. You didn't do, what do you mean?
Yeah. Right.
Oral sex. I mean, so some of these sexual scripts I think are going to persist, but I'm really excited about, you know, how normalized and, celebrated or, you know, diversity has become sexually. Cause I think that has a trickle down effect for people regardless of their sexual expression. So I think that's pretty cool. I'm really excited about that. And also it helps people feel, less shameful and loving in themselves, and empowered. So, that will have a big impact on people's overall wellness. I'm excited for that. I think that's the future.
Yeah.
Queers.
Yeah. And I'm really excited for the next generation. They're carrying us, you know, I feel like they're the ones breaking
Seriously.
Every generation does something that breaks the door wide open for the next one, right? It's like, don't forget about your elders, okay?
Yeah.
Well, Todd, thank you so much for doing this. Where can the confidants follow you, find you, sign up for courses?
Follow me on Instagram at yourdiagnonsense. And there are links to my website and courses. I would spell out my website, but unfortunately I picked my name, which was dumb. I should have done like blueyellow.com. It's my full name, which is toddasparis.com. So check me out on Instagram at yourdiagnonsense.
Your diag nonsense. Awesome. Well, confidants, thanks so much for tuning in. Don't forget to rate this on five stars. I was going to say, Todd, believe it or not, this podcast gets over 20,000 listens a week, and we only have 1,000 reviews on iTunes. And I think that math does not pan out. Why are people not rating this?
I mean, I'm not good at math, but I could tell that doesn't sound right.
That's it. No. Confidants, why are you? We can rate on Spotify now. We can rate on Apple Podcasts. So just take a moment. Pause this right now.
I'm going to go do that right now.
Oh, my God, Todd, I fucking love you. You're the best. So besides that, thank you so much, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you all.